Have you ever stopped to think about what really goes into getting clean, reliable water to your house? I mean, every single day.
It feels so simple, doesn't it? Just turn on the tap.
Exactly. But behind that, there's this whole hidden world. Planning, engineering.
Yeah.
It's pretty complex stuff.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're the show that pulls back the curtain on how critical local infrastructure actually gets built.
And today, we're diving into a really interesting piece of that puzzle, an actual legal document.
Right, it's the kind of agreement that actually makes these projects happen. We're looking at a Master Professional Services Agreement Task Authorization, number 4 specifically.
Yeah, this one's between the city of Shawnee, well, the Shawnee Municipal Authority and an engineering firm, Fries and Nichols Inc. You'll see them called FNI.
FNI.
And it really gives you a window into how a city and, these professional service providers work together, that whole dance.
So our mission today is to unpack the specific task authorization. It's called TO4N Midland Edition Waterline Replacement. We want to get the key details, understand the process, how the risk is managed, who does what, all the nuts and bolts.
Let's do it.
So let's start with the basics. What is this project physically doing on the ground in Shawnee, Oklahoma?
All right. So fundamentally, it's about replacing old water pipe, about 1,100 feet of it.
Okay, 1,100 feet, where about?
It runs along Scott Street and North Minnesota Avenue. And the existing line is only 2 inches.
2 inches. Wow, that's pretty small for a water main, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Especially by today's standards. So they're upgrading it significantly
What?
to a new 8-inch line. Nominal size. And the material they're planning on using is HDPE.
HDPE. That's high density polyethylene.
Exactly. Very durable stuff. Flexible too. Good choice for underground lines.
That sounds like a major upgrade. Better flow, longer life, I assume.
Definitely.
Now, I saw something interesting in the document about where the work happens. It says it's all within existing right of way or easements.
Yes, and that's actually a really big deal.
Why is that?
Well, right of way is basically land the public already uses, like the strip alongside the road,
Yeah.
by staying in that existing footprint.
Ah, they don't need to buy new land or negotiate with property owners?
Precisely. That whole process of acquiring new easements can be super time-consuming, expensive, legally complicated.
So avoiding that streamlines things quite a bit.
Hugely. It suggests some good upfront planning went into this.
Okay, makes sense. Now, this is a contract, so let's talk cost. How much is authorized for this task?
The total authorized amount is $82,645.
82, 645.
Okay.
Okay. And that was approved back in March 2024.
That's right, March 25th.
What's interesting is how that total breaks down. It's not just one lump sum for everything.
No, and that breakdown tells you a lot about managing risk and certainty in these kinds of projects.
How so?
Well, look at the basic services for design. That's a fixed $30,000 lump sum.
Meaning the city knows exactly what that part will cost.
Right. Predictability. Same for the bid phase, that's also a lump sum, $9,930.
Okay, but then the construction services are different.
Yes, the general construction services, not the construction itself, but FNI's oversight during construction, that's $16,420 on a cost-plus basis.
Cost plus. So FNI gets reimbursed for their expenses plus a fee.
Exactly. You often see that when the exact time or effort needed is harder to pin down beforehand, construction can have surprises.
Unforeseen issues pop up.
Right. And then the special services, like the survey and the hydraulic analysis we'll talk about, those are back to lump sums. Even the ODEQ permit fee reimbursement is handled cost plus.
So it's this mix and match approach to payment based on predictability.
Precisely. It shows how carefully they allocate funds and manage the financial risk for both predictable and less predictable parts of the job.
Okay, let's dive into that first big phase then, preliminary and final design. What does it actually take to get the plans drawn up? It's way more than just sketching, right?
So absolutely. It kicks off usually with a virtual meeting. Get the whole team together, figure out communication, gather up all the existing documents the city might have.
Like old plans, maps.
Exactly. They review existing construction plans, land records, and they do a field visit. Get eyes on the actual site.
Makes sense. Now, utilities must be a huge factor. Everything buried underground. How do they avoid hitting something critical?
Yeah, that's crucial.
Yeah.
Utility coordination. It involves contacting all the franchise utility companies, gas, electric, phone, cable,
All of them.
to figure out where their stuff is,
Yeah.
identify potential conflicts before they become problems.
Yeah.
They might even have up to one specific coordination meeting just for that.
Wow.
And during the detailed design, they'll have progress meetings, maybe up to 2 virtual ones,
yeah,
just to keep everyone in the loop and make sure the design is heading in the right direction.
So after all that initial work, what does the city actually get to see? What are the deliverables?
Okay, first up is the preliminary design. This includes the proposed route for the new water line.
The alignment.
Right, and preliminary drawings. These are pretty detailed already, like plans and profiles, usually at a specific scale, like 1 inch equals 20 feet horizontally. So quite precise.
And a cost estimate too, I bet.
Yep, an initial opinion of probable project costs. This all gets bundled into what's called the 50% design submittal.
50%, so like the first major draft for the city to review.
Exactly. 3 printed copies, 1 electronic.
Now, I also saw mention of an engineering report, an ER. What's that for?
The ER. That's often tied to funding requirements, especially if they're getting money from, say, the Oklahoma Water Resources Board, OWRB.
Okay.
It's a comprehensive document. It describes the whole water system, the site, why the project is needed, what alternatives they looked at.
A justification.
Right. Plus a proposed solution, design details, hydraulic info, and a really detailed cost estimate, including engineering, legal, even contingency funds. Mm. It basically tells the whole story of the project for funding agencies or regulator.
Got it. So once the city signs off on that preliminary design,
then F&I moves into final design. Mm. They prepare the final detailed drawings, the specifications, like what materials to use, how to install things, and the actual construction contract documents.
The full package.
The full package. And an interesting detail here is traffic control.
Oh, yeah. How do they manage that? Closing streets must be disruptive.
Well, for this project, they're handling it with just a narrative and notes on the plans. No super detailed traffic control plan sheets.
Really?
Yeah, they specify block closures only 1 block at a time, it looks like, across 5 phases. And the key thing is maintaining access for residents.
That sounds practical for a neighborhood project like this. Avoids overcomplicating it.
Seems like it. They explicitly say the detailed detour plans aren't included.
Okay. And the final deliverables for this phase?
A revised cost opinion, probably more accurate now, the forms bidders will use. And the 100% final design submittal, ready to go out for bids.
And permits. Can't forget the permit.
Never. F&I submits the documents to the required agencies. In this case, the Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality, ODEQ, construction permit is a definite.
And who pays for that?
F&I handles the submission. The document says they initially pay the fee, but the city reimburses them. It's listed under special services, actually.
Okay, good clarification. So plans are done, permits are underway. Now you need someone to actually build it. Phase 2, the bid phase. How does that work?
F&I helps the city get bids. They send out a notice to bidders.
To who?
To contractors in their own database, and to what are called plan rooms places contractors check for projects. The city pays for any public advertising costs, though.
So F&I kind of manages the outreach to potential builders.
Yeah, they facilitate it. The actual bid documents, those usually go online.
Mm.
The agreement mentions Civcast or the owner's website.
Civcast, like an online portal for this stuff.
Exactly. Makes it easy for contractors to access everything. F&I keeps track of who's got the documents, answers questions, issues addenda if plans change slightly.
Addenda are like updates or clarifications.
Right. They'll also help run a pre-bid conference where contractors can ask questions live.
Then the bids come in.
And F&I assists the city again, opening bids, tabulating them, you know, putting them in a spreadsheet, analyzing them, checking the low bidder's qualifications.
Making sure they can actually do the job.
Right. And then they recommend who the city should award the contract to. Though, actually pre-qualifying all bidders before they bid, that's listed as an additional service if needed.
Ah, okay. So the standard service is checking the low bidder after the fact.
Seems so. And once a contractor is chosen.
Then what?
F&I helps prepare the final construction contract documents, provides 10 sets for everyone to sign.
All right. Contract signed. Phase 3. Construction. Shovels in the ground time. What's F&I's role on site? And what are they explicitly not responsible for?
This part of the agreement is really important. It sets clear boundaries.
Okay.
F&I states very clearly, they do not guarantee the contractor's work.
Right. They designed it, but they don't guarantee the construction quality itself.
Exactly. And they're not responsible for how the contractor chooses to build it. The means, methods, techniques, sequence.
Or safety.
Or safety precautions.
Oh.
Or any mistakes the contractor or their workers make. F&I is only responsible for their own employees' actions or omissions.
That's a critical distinction for liability, I imagine.
Absolutely critical. It keeps the lines clear. The contractor is responsible for the day-to-day work and site safety.
So what does F&I do during construction then? under the basic services.
They assist with the pre-construction conference. They review the contractor schedule. They keep project documentation. They monitor submittals from the contractor.
Like shop drawings for specific parts.
Exactly. Or requests for information, RFIs. And here's a key point, site visits.
How often are they out there?
For this basic scope, they make up to 2 visits. Just 2.
Only 2 visits for the whole construction phase.
That's what's in the basic scope, yes.
Oh, correct.
To observe the general progress and quality and report any problems they see.
And if more visits are needed?
That falls under additional services. Requires separate authorization and payment.
Interesting. Okay, what else during construction?
They interpret the plans and specs if the city or contractor has questions. And near the end, they do a final review.
To see if it matches the design?
Generally, yes. For conformance with the design concept and general compliance, they prepare a punch list, a list of deficiencies the contractor needs to fix.
And if that takes more than a couple of trips?
Again, more than 2 trips for that final review process is an additional service.
Got it. And finally?
They help recommend final payment to the contractor once everything's satisfactory. And they create record drawings.
Record drawings, like the as-built plans.
Exactly. They revise the original drawings based on info the contractor provides about what actually got built. The final map, essentially. They provide 3 printed sets and 1 electronic copy of those.
Okay, so that covers the core phases. But the contract mentions special services. What makes these special?
These are specific, often technical tasks that provide essential data, but aren't part of the standard design flow or construction oversight. Very distinct things.
Like what?
Like the topographic and SUE survey. That's a big one.
Topographic is mapping the ground level, right?
And subsurface utility engineering. Basically mapping what's under the ground.
Ah, finding those hidden pipes and cables before you dig.
Precisely. They use established methods, quality level B, according to ASCE standards. That's the American Society of Civil Engineers. It's about locating and mapping underground utilities to avoid hitting them. Hugely important.
And the topographic part.
That involves setting survey control points, mapping the road right of way, plus about 10 feet on each side.
Yeah.
They collect features like the road itself, sidewalks, fences, drainage structures.
Visible stuff.
Visible stuff, yeah. And visible or marked utilities.
Yeah.
And they also get city atlas sheets to help locate public sewer, storm, water lines, and even physically open manholes sometime to measure pipe depths.
Wow, that's detailed. Real detective work.
It has to be. You need that level of accuracy. Mm-hmm. It also includes plotting property lines based on deeds and plats.
So that's the survey. What else is special?
Hydraulic analysis. This is about modeling the water system.
To make sure the new pipe works correctly with the rest of the network.
Exactly. And specifically for ODQ permitting here, they use the city's GIS data, old drawings, pump info, storage tank info.
They need a lot of data from the city for this, I bet.
They do. The agreement lists specifics, GIS data, plans for the Edwards elevated storage tank, population projections, water production numbers, SCADA data, supervisory control, and data acquisition. It's the system that monitors the water network remotely, pressures, flows. Plus, the city provides hydrant pressure test results.
And FNI puts all that together.
To estimate water demands and run a fire flow analysis. Make sure the system can provide enough water for firefighting, meet ODQ standards. They even produce maps showing the available fire flow.
That really shows the engineering needed to ensure everything works safely. Anything else under special services?
Just the ODQ permit itself, preparing and submitting the application. As we mentioned, FNI pays the fee initially, and the city pays them back.
Oh, okay. So we have basic services, special services. What about things that are definitely not included? The additional services.
Right. This section clarifies what's outside the agreed scope and would cost extra if needed.
Like what kind of things? Give me some examples.
Okay. Detailed property reports on ownership or easements. Actually creating the legal documents for new easements or staking them out in the field.
So if they did need new easements, that work would be extra.
Correct. Also things like coordinating with landowners directly for access or needing extra GIS mapping help.
What about unforeseen ground conditions?
Geotechnical investigations like soil borings or environmental assessments, those were typically additional services unless specified otherwise.
And what about having someone from FNI on site all the time during construction? You said the basic service only includes 2 visits.
Exactly. Providing a resident project representative, or RPR, for continuous on-site presence. That is explicitly listed as an additional service.
That's a major difference in oversight level.
Huge difference. And it highlights that the basic fee covers limited observation, not full-time inspection.
Any other examples? Legal issues.
Yep. Assisting in litigation, helping with contractor claims unless F&I caused them, dealing with bid protests or having to redesign things because regulations change after the agreement is signed, all additional.
It really defines the edges of the agreement, clearly.
It has to. Manages expectations and potential costs down the line.
So let's talk timeline. How long does all this take?
The agreement in Exhibit A lays out a schedule.
Okay.
The kickoff meeting should happen within 14 days of getting the go-ahead, the notice to proceed.
Quick start.
Then submitting the preliminary plans takes 8 weeks from that kickoff.
2 months for preliminary design.
Roughly. Then, after the city gives comments, submitting the final plans takes another 4 weeks.
Okay, so the whole design phase is maybe 3-4 months.
In that ballpark, yeah. Then the bid phase kicks in. That's estimated at about 8 weeks from when the plans are finalized and ready.
Finding the contractor.
Right. And then the construction phase itself is estimated at around 25 weeks.
So roughly 6 months for construction.
Give or take. So you're looking at, you know, well over a year from start to finish, potentially, considering all the steps and potential reviews.
And what happens if things get delayed? Say, the city takes longer than expected to review something.
The contract allows F&I to adjust the schedule and their compensation if delays happen that aren't their fault, like client reviews, regulatory holdups, or if the city is slow providing needed information.
That seems fair. Protects the consultant from delays they can't control.
It's standard practice to include clauses like that.
Now, we've talked a lot about what F&I does. This is a partnership. What are the City of Shawnee's responsibilities here?
Oh, absolutely crucial. The city has significant duties. For instance, they need to acknowledge that change orders during construction are expected.
Changes to the plan or cost once work starts.
Right. The agreement even recommends the city budget for them 5% extra for new construction, 10% for renovations.
That's proactive.
And it clarifies F&I isn't responsible for change order costs caused by things like unexpected site conditions, changes the client or contractor want, or minor non-negligent errors by F&I.
Okay, managing expectations around changes. What else?
The city has to designate, in writing, a specific person to be their representative, someone with authority to make decisions related to the contract.
A point person.
Yes. For this project, it's Seth Barkheimer, a PE. His contact info is right there.
And the city needs to provide information, right?
All sorts of information. Project requirements, design goals, budget limits, any existing reports or data they have that's relevant.
Access to?
Yes, they have to arrange access for F&I to get onto public and private property needed for the work. And the city's responsible for getting all necessary governmental approvals and permits other than the ones F&I handles as part of the service.
What about investigating what's underground? You mentioned geotechnical.
That falls to the client. The city is responsible for arranging and paying for any subsurface investigations, like soil borings, and for interpreting that data. F&I relies on the info the city provides.
So the city owns the risk associated with ground conditions, essentially?
Generally, yes, unless F&I is specifically hired for geotechnical services. The city also needs to review F&I's submittals promptly and make kindly decisions in writing.
Keep the project moving.
Right, and attend key meetings, pre-bid, bid opening, pre-construction. And if they see anything wrong, any defect or issue that might affect the project, they need to notify F&I promptly in writing.
It really underscores that it's a two-way street. Both sides have clear obligations.
Definitely. And just like the city has a designated rep, F&I does too. Jonathan Fotberry, PE, is listed for F&I. And both sides have accounting contacts listed as well.
Lindsay McNabb Fox for the city, Stephanie Kirkstand for F&I. That level of detail just screams clear communication.
It's essential for projects like this to run smoothly.
So we've gone from a simple waterline replacement concept all the way through design, bidding, construction oversight, special analyses, and defined responsibilities, all packed into this one agreement.
It really shows you, doesn't it, how much detail goes into planning even relatively small public works projects.
It absolutely does. These agreements, they seem incredibly valuable for breaking down complexity, setting expectations,
and defining roles and liabilities. That clarity is paramount when you're spending public money and impacting communities. It's the framework that turns plans into reality.
So here's something for you, our listener, to think about. We just unpacked the detailed planning, the legal definitions, the specific services needed just to replace 1,100 feet of water pipe.
Not even a quarter mile.
Right. So if this much goes into that, what does it tell you about the incredible amount of hidden work, the complexity, the sheer volume of coordination that lies behind every single piece of public infrastructure you rely on every day? Your roads, your power, that water from your tap.
Makes you think, doesn't it?